You're listening to the Bible for Normal People, the only God-ordained podcast on the internet. Serious talk about the sacred book. I'm Pete Enns.
And I'm Jared Bias.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Welcome everyone to this episode of the Bible for Normal People. My name is Jared, and as you'll notice, as we go through, Pete is not on today, but wait, don't turn it off. Hopefully this will give me a chance to introduce myself a little bit, give a background. And today, the topic that I'm going to dip into through telling some of my story is taking the Bible seriously, but not literally. And as you, if you've listened to the podcast, will become aware, sometimes or oftentimes we have guests on that Pete and myself will interview. Sometimes Pete and I have an episode where we just talk back and forth about a particular topic. And sometimes we each individually will share either about a particular topic or a particular text of the Bible. We saw this not too long ago for the first time when Pete got on and talked about some of the beliefs of the Israelites related to one God or many gods. So hopefully this is a chance I can share some of my background. I'm not nearly as popular as Pete. So I thought I'd take this time to introduce myself a little bit. If we're going to understand my story as it relates to the Bible and religion, there's a few things to know. One, I grew up in a very religious household. My grandmother is a traveling preacher, the Pentecostal charismatic persuasion. And my dad grew up pretty Southern Baptist. I don't know what that means. I'll let you fill in the blanks there. But growing up in Texas, we were Southern Baptist for much of my upbringing. Now, about the time I was 15, for many, many reasons that we won't go into today, I was introduced to the idea of systematic theology. So at 15, while some people wanted to become doctors and attorneys, I wanted to go to Westminster Seminary and become a professor of presuppositional apologetics, which for those of you who don't know, which would be all but maybe 30 of you, presuppositional apologetics is simply, in one way or another, defending the faith against claims of atheism, agnosticism, naturalism, and many other isms that would come against the beliefs and tenets of biblical Christianity. So at 15, and a reason I pin it to 15 is because that was the day. That was the day I distinctly remember when I received my own copy, as many, many a young strapping lad will remember the day they also received Wayne Grudem's Introduction to Systematic Theology. It was a college textbook, had a blue cover, and was about 1,500 pages long. What a glorious day. It wasn't even Christmas, but it felt like it. I started going through that. I spent my nights undercover of my friends, not letting them know of how much of a nerd I was, listening to cassette tapes of Dr. Bonson, Dr. Cornelius Van Til, all of these thinkers in a particular strand of thinking in presuppositional apologetics. So that was what I loved to do. I ended up then at Liberty University in Virginia, again, growing up Southern Baptist. It's what good Southern Baptists consider doing, going to Liberty University. So I left my home in Texas, went to Virginia, and got a degree. Initially, actually, I'd gotten a degree, was planning to get a degree in math before I stopped off to Westminster Seminary. Ended up in philosophy, by accident. I took it as a gen ed course, and, you know, as many, many college students do, sat in that class and thought to myself, oh my word, you can major in this? You can get a degree in this? And so, much to the chagrin of my parents and anyone who had hopes of me having a lucrative career in something other than academics, I changed my major to philosophy. So I graduated there and went to Westminster Seminary. Now, to back up a little bit, when I was in high school and after I received my initiation, my Wayne Grudem textbook, I started going to a Presbyterian church by myself. So my parents would have attended a different church, and I wanted to go there. So still involved, actually probably in a number of churches at that point, but would have myself identified as Presbyterian. And so went to Westminster. I was Presbyterian in my theology throughout my time at Liberty as well, which didn't play heavily into things as a philosophy major. But went to Westminster, a Presbyterian seminary in the Philadelphia area. And I went there again to get a PhD in presuppositional apologetics. And the first semester I was there, man, these professors, I don't know how else to say it, but they were just, to me, my opinion here, they were just jerks. I sat in the class, and the arrogance and just the way of speaking about people who didn't understand these ornate theological concepts and the condescension toward people who didn't understand deep theological truths that were passed down from generation to generation, going all the way back from Adam and Eve through Gerhardus Voss and Ritterboss and Cornelius Van Til. And, of course, these guys who hold the absolute truth that only 37 people in the world know about. But it just felt wrong to me. I don't know how else to say it. It was a very emotional reaction, I think. And at that point, my world crumbled a little bit. Here I was, at this point, 20 years old, had gone to Westminster for graduate school, for a master's degree, and had wanted to get this PhD in apologetics since I was about 15 years old. And all of a sudden, it didn't seem all that compelling anymore. Fortunately for me, at the same time, as I was bearing with these biblical studies classes, I mean, goodness gracious, why study the Bible when you can study systematic theology that fits into a lot of nice, neat little boxes? So I was bearing through those when it came to my attention that the faculty in the biblical studies department, man, these guys, they were lovers, not fighters. They cared about people. They had genuine and deep concern for the things that they taught from the Bible, from the things that they were talking about in their communities. Their theology was alive, and it was deeply rooted in the Bible. And that was compelling to me. That was exciting to me. And so I immediately changed my focus and specialty to biblical studies and just tagged along to these guys. One of my professors being the great, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Peter Enns, but also Mike Kelly, Doug Green, a host of others, absolutely fell in love with the Bible. I fell in love with the way that they were taking the Bible seriously and the surprising conclusions they were coming to, and how, even though it was basically deconstructing and tearing apart all of the preconceived notions that I had of the Bible, their faithfulness in the way that they lived their lives gave me hope, gave me this sense that maybe having this one particular view of the Bible wasn't the only way to be a godly person or to be a faithful person. That maybe faithfulness in the way we live our lives and maybe faithfulness to the Bible could look differently than I had previously imagined. So it was a real turning point for me to see this faith in action while from these guys and women, although mostly guys, let's be honest at that point, these professors who, by all accounts, my upbringing would have said they were progressives, they were liberals, they were not to be trusted, that, and if you held to these kind of theological concepts or to these understandings of the Bible, your life would not reflect the gospel. And they were a walking contradiction. They were saying things like, perhaps Genesis 1 to 3 isn't intended to be read as a historical account. And yet their lives were reflecting the gospel. And so that was a really important moment for me. And I said, rather than be like these guys, I want to be like these guys. And never really looked back. So I graduated from there. And rather than becoming a professor, I actually became a pastor at a congregation of about 3,000 people. So there were, I had three primary roles. I was one of five teaching pastors. So we rotated. Our senior pastor would teach more than the rest of us, probably twice as much. And then we were all on a teaching rotation where we would, where we'd preach on a regular rotation through different topics or through different texts. I was also the pastor of what we call Serve, which was all of our ministry opportunities. And then I was the pastor of a smaller group. So I was the primary pastor, not of the 3,000. There were five of us who did that, but was the primary pastor of a smaller church within a church called Encounter. Again, this was common back in the late 90s and early 2000s to reach the millennials, as they would be later called, to reach a different generation, a different approach to the scriptures. And that was about maybe 300 people or so. So I was their primary pastor. They would have often probably considered me their primary pastor for a while. Then I was a teaching pastor at this church. And through that, basically did that for 4 or 5 years. Was an interesting time, primarily focused on teaching, but the environment got to be pretty toxic, and my understanding of church and other things started to not necessarily connect, and so ended up leaving there and became a professor at this point. And in Arizona at Grand Canyon University in North Phoenix, where my wife is from, so we moved our family. At that point, we had three kids, and our daughter would have only been 3 months old when we moved out to Phoenix from the Philadelphia area. And I taught philosophy, biblical studies, primarily Old Testament introduction and the prophets as well, and ethics and various philosophy courses in there, which again was more of my undergraduate background. And so I taught a number of courses for a number of years. Absolutely loved that. And just to bring you up to speed before we talk briefly about the topic at hand and taking the Bible seriously, not literally, so we can close the gap in those years. Eventually left being a professor there at Grand Canyon University. Through this time in my mid-20s, I'd also started running and owning businesses, marketing and communications, and various and sundry things that I could sink my teeth into. Was invited, a very great opportunity to start a school in Chicago, where we partnered with Stanford's D School, School of Design, to help build a curriculum as a way to replace as an apprenticeship-based school as a substitute or alternative to an MBA program. Anyway, for anyone who's interested, I'd be happy to talk about all of that stuff. That's what I primarily do now, is continue to run and own businesses. I'm a business advisor. I do a lot of other boring things that don't relate to biblical studies, though you would be amazed at how much of my work actually connects with my background and my past. So currently, as far as it relates to the Bible, I attend a Mennonite congregation up back here in the Philadelphia area. And I love my role at our congregation as being a facilitator of our Sunday school class and semi-regular Bible teacher for various teaching series, and have led some Bible retreats for other churches in the area absolutely love still getting to teach. It's in my bones. I'll always be a teacher there. The only other piece I'll tag on to that is my relationship with Pete. He was going through a similar leaving from an institution when I was also leaving my pastoral position. We reconnected at that point and became good friends, talked a lot through that time as we went through our own kind of valley and re-faith formation and recreation of what it means to be a Christian. And through that, actually ended up writing Genesis for Normal People together, which was published back in 2012, which was a wonderful opportunity for me. So let's go back and just a theme or thread that continued to go through my story ever since I was a kid is the idea of taking the Bible seriously, not literally. And this is a personal story for me, which is interesting. I tend not to share personal things. But ever since I can remember, I loved reading the Bible. I mean, I devoured that thing in high school. I would read it front to back, back to front, underlining, memorizing. My Bible had sticky notes in it where I would keep notes. I loved finding connections between this verse and that verse and this theme and that theme ever since I was a kid. And then as I got older and I began to teach in more settings, I think I was naive because I thought what we were supposed to be doing was take the Bible seriously and go wherever its conclusions led me to go. And I found out slowly over time through these painful experiences that that wasn't okay. What was actually sacrosanct, or what was actually the dogma, was a certain community's interpretation of the Bible. And if you dug too deeply, you might find yourself outside of that group. And when I was a pastor at the congregation I mentioned earlier, one of my roles was to teach a class called For Skeptics Only. So we had a lot of believers whose spouses weren't Christians at all. And we wanted to make it a place because a lot of times church is a place where you can connect with your family, but if you have an unbelieving spouse and a believing spouse, it can get tricky. So we wanted to offer a safe place for non-believers, and we were very adamant about that. We would kick Christians out, actually, and they were often very easy to spot because they asked ridiculous questions sometimes. But we would kick them out. It was for non-Christians only, For Skeptics Only, it was called. And what I found out was over the years of teaching that class, more and more I would get people who would come in and say, well, I thought I was a Christian, but my mom or my aunt or my husband or my sister or my son, they told me that maybe I'm not because of how I read the Bible, because of the conclusions I'm coming to, because I'm a biologist and I accept evolution and think that that's how God created things. And so there were actually ended up being a confused group who would identify themselves as Christian, but from a family or social group had been kind of kicked out. And they were there to check themselves and say, almost like a rehab, there was an intervention on their behalf. And this was rehab for them that their family had recommended to them. And that was extremely painful for them. And so I had the opportunity to walk with them, walk alongside them, and not rehabilitate their theology, but rehabilitate their grounding in their faith to say, it's okay. It's okay to have doubts. It's okay not to know. It's okay to have this belief that is well within what Christians have believed and can believe over thousands of years. And just the sigh of relief to know that the Christian faith has a big tent, has a big umbrella, room for a lot of beliefs and a lot of things. So I share that because that's the part of that journey that I walked with others was, I wish someone was there with me when I was walking through that, when I was getting those painful looks or those well-meaning conversations with a pastor who was concerned for my soul, who was concerned about the way that I was reading the Bible. And the confusion I had and the hurt that I had was saying, wait, I thought we were supposed to be authentic. I thought we were supposed to be honest. And honestly, this is what my studies and my understanding, and especially, you know, after seminary, when you have the different tools, like the original languages and things, these are the conclusions that just seem obvious to me at this point. And to not have a community to talk to about that was very painful. So that's the context of this taking the Bible seriously, is I encountered this growing group of people who took the Bible so seriously, but not literally. And their communities, what they needed from these people was for them to read the Bible literally. And not to say that people who do read it literally aren't taking it seriously. But I do think, and what we're going to say is, I think that's actually probably more true, more often than not. So my encouragement would be that we all stop saying that we read the Bible literally. And that's for a few reasons. The main one I want to talk about here is simply that most everyone I know reads parts of the Bible literally and parts of it figuratively. And as we'll talk about in a minute, that says nothing about whether it's historically accurate. So literal and historically accurate don't actually mean the same thing in the English language. So we just want to be clear about what we're saying, because then we can disagree, but let's just be clear on what we're disagreeing about. And I find the saying that we read the Bible literally unhelpful, because it's just inaccurate. So when you say that there's parts of the Bible that are intended to be read literally, that means not figuratively. So there are things in the Kings, let's say, or in Samuel, that's a narrative. That doesn't seem to be a metaphor for anything. There doesn't seem to be rhetorical devices in certain sections that give you a clue as to read this in some other way. But it's a literal reading of Kings. That actually doesn't say anything about whether it actually happened or not. It just says that that's what the author intends you to read, straightforwardly. It's not a metaphor for something else. It's not a simile. It's not a parable. It's not an allegory. It's a narrative. It's a story. So, and stories that didn't actually happen in reality can still have parts that are literal. So when Jack in the beanstalk, and Jack goes up the beanstalk, and the narrative says, and Jack went up the beanstalk, that's not a metaphor for something. That's being literal. That's telling you a straightforward narrative. But then there's also parts of the Bible where it's clear that it is figurative. And that can be basic metaphors, like throughout the Psalms, when God is called a rock or a fortress or a shield, right? So if we said we read the Bible literally and we mean the Bible, all of it, then we'd actually be wrong in doing so, because it would become nonsense. How can God literally be a rock? So that means he's composed of whatever the components of a rock are, and that's what God is. He's a rock. And then it would be less sense for God to be a rock and a shield and a fortress. How could you be all those things at the same time and in the same way? Seems like a contradiction. But maybe it's metaphor. And so we do take the Bible figuratively, metaphorically, when it seems that that is what the author intends. And the same with Jesus and the parables, that is a parable. And it seems foolish to expect archaeologists to go around wondering if we can find the remains of the prodigal son, since that was Jesus' intentions, was to make a point, a moral point, or some other immaterial point outside of a historically accurate event. So with that being said, I want to talk about what the alternative is. So there's two things I think we often mean when we talk about reading the Bible literally. So again, I would encourage people who identify as those who read the Bible literally to maybe get a little more specific and try a few of these. So what I often encounter is what they really mean is one of these two things. So one, that the Bible is historically accurate when it's trying to record historical events. So a lot of people who say, I read the Bible literally, that's what they mean. That the Bible is historically accurate when it is trying to record historical events. Now, I know that's harder to say than I read the Bible literally, but with some practice, I think it'd roll right off the tongue. So I think that's what a lot of people mean when they say they take it literally. They mean, I believe that large sections of the Bible were meant to be read as accurate historical accounts, and I also believe that they are historically accurate. Now, it's important to note what I did there. Those are two different things. It's easy to believe that Kings was meant to be historically accurate, right? So biblical scholars who aren't Christians, who aren't believers, would almost all agree, Samuel Kings is recording what the author believes to be, in some sense, historically accurate, though even they wouldn't have had the same idea of historically accurate as we would. That's a modern invention of kind of the recording from a video camera point of view exactly what happened, since the ancients wouldn't have had a video camera, and that's not really how they recorded history or why they recorded history. They weren't really interested in recording things as they actually occurred. What would be the point of that? There was always some agenda or propaganda or interpretation. That's what gives the recording meaning. That's why you would record it. But that's for another podcast. So the first step is, does the text actually want us to take this as a historical account? The second step would then be, do I actually personally believe that it is historically accurate as well? And again, have to be careful, because what the author probably meant by historically accurate isn't the same as what we would mean today as historically accurate. But that's often what we mean when we say that we take the Bible literally, that it's historically accurate when it's trying to record historical events. And I think most people would agree that that's what they mean when they say they take it literally. The other option, which I think is a little more dangerous, is that the Bible is clear and simple. This one's more dangerous. So when people take the Bible literally, I found whenever I challenge that, they get pretty frustrated and flustered. Well, the Bible's just so clear. It's so obvious. It's so simple. And if you question the simplicity or the clear, what the Bible's clearly saying, then usually one of two things is true. You don't have enough faith. For instance, if you don't think that Jonah was actually historically swallowed by a whale, but maybe it's parable, maybe it's an extended metaphor, and you actually think that that's what the Bible says, is intending, well, but the clear and simple, as the argument goes, understanding is that, no, this actually happened in history. And if you don't believe that, you're just making up excuses. The real reason is you don't have enough faith to believe that God can perform miracles. Or the second is, when you don't want to take the Bible clear, literally, or that it's clear in what it's saying, it's because you have some moral failing or moral sin that you're trying to run away from or escape. That's been my experience. Again, it's not always true, but often this idea that the Bible is clear and simple is what people often mean when they say they read the Bible literally. Now, I want to just make a caveat with this, because as a pastor, one of my failings, I think that's probably appropriate to say, was thinking that everyone needed to understand the complexity and nuance of the Bible. And I would absolutely say that's not the case. I loved our episode last time with Dennis Lamoureux, where his humility about not wanting to disrupt or shake the faith of the saints, as he put it. I loved how he put that. that his role isn't to go into people's lives who feel secure and who are doing their best with the mental capacity and development that they have to serve the Lord, as he would put it. I learned that lesson the hard way. Being a pastor in their early 20s with a congregation of 3,000 was probably a bit too much for me to handle at the time. I was pretty arrogant, thought I knew a lot, thought I knew everything, and I thought everyone else, to be a good Christian, needed to know what I knew. So when I say that people who say they take the Bible literally, what they mean is that it's clear and simple. I don't necessarily, the danger in that isn't the clarity or simplicity that someone feels they have about the Bible. It's when they begin to impose or judge others who question that clarity or question that simplicity for themselves. So just important that I make that caveat, because what I'm not advocating is to disrupt someone. I think of many of the older ladies in our congregation whose faith was simple and who lived out their faith in simple but profound ways. And it was about the behavior, and it was about the lifestyle, and it was about the patterns, and it was about the kindness and the graces and the help and the support. It was about the living out of the faith and not the mental assent to these beliefs about what the Bible is. That I have no problem with. But whenever we wield clarity and simplicity as a weapon against other people who are challenging it or who themselves don't feel it's so clear and simple, that's what I have a problem with. But the another reason I would just say more basically for why this is a little bit dangerous is it often doesn't recognize we all have a filter. So when we say we read the Bible literally, and if we mean that it's clear and simple, what we often mean is I don't read it through a filter. You're interpreting the Bible. I'm just reading the Bible. That is a pretty dangerous statement. We all interpret the Bible. We all have a filter. The Bible isn't clear and simple. In fact, we have a filter because it helps the Bible become clear and simple. It organizes the Bible for us, that filter that we use. Because the Bible is pretty messy. It has a lot of warts and nooks and crannies and contradictions and sideway paths and unclear statements and holes in the narrative and a lot of question marks. Just like a lot of other things, just like life itself. And so we bring meaning to it. We interpret it. We can't get away from that. We bring our own experiences. We bring our own mindset. We bring our own assumptions, our own culture. It's a relationship. And just like any relationship, it's a two-way street. And so I bring myself to it, and the text brings itself to it, and that filter helps us to organize and make sense. So we can respect that text, just like in a relationship. We can let it shape us and mold us and change our worldview, but we can also never escape the fact that we will bring a worldview, we will bring a perspective to the text. So overall, that's why I've gotten away from saying that I take the Bible literally, because I think it's unhelpful. I'd much rather, I found it so much more fruitful in my life to take the Bible seriously and not worry about whether or not I'm taking it literally. So, hope this has been a helpful discussion for two reasons. One, hope that it has helped you to get to know me a little bit better, my background, and secondly, to talk a little bit about this idea of taking the Bible seriously, not literally. I'd love to hear from you all about your experiences of taking the Bible literally, seriously, historically accurate, these broad brushstrokes, these one-sentence definitions of how we read the Bible, and how they can be helpful or maybe not helpful. So I look forward to doing that. We hope to see you next time. If you haven't already, please check us out at patreon.com/thebibleforNormalPeople. There, you'll find a lot of ways to engage us. We have a Slack community for supporters who give $5 or more a month that will allow for some of these discussions to take place. We would love to jump in on those discussions see what's going on, and allow you guys to have those conversations with one another. We also have an opportunity to have hangouts with Pete and myself, as well as book studies that will start up next month, where we're going to pick a book that's been influential to us, or a recent book that we think is really good, and we're going to walk through it with a limited number of people and actually engage in a discussion about the book. So again, we really encourage you to do that. We look forward to seeing you there. Patreon.com/thebiblefornormalpeople. See you next time.